The Equest Podcast, Funds Industry Conversations.
Demystify funds regulation and jargon with the Equest Academy. Tailored funds industry training programs to help you march up the learning curve.
Hello, podcast listeners. Welcome to another episode of our first 18 series of Equest Podcasts. These podcasts coincide with the launch in summer 2019 of our special report called First 18 From Survive to Thrive. It's a roadmap for newly authorised fund management companies to guide them through the key challenges that they're likely to face during their first 18 months of authorisation. And in each episode, we take an individual topic set out in the report and chat to some industry experts to tease it out a little bit further. Before that, though, here's some housekeeping from Equest. I am delighted to announce some very exciting news from the world of Equest. We are going to be holding our first ever Funds Masterclass by Equest on Friday, the 28th of June, 2019 in the brand new business school in Trinity College. I think it'll be the very first event to be held in that new venue. The Funds Masterclass is designed as a 1 day of training, CPD points, on a range of issues that are very current and topical in the funds industry. But it's not a conference in the sense of chatting about future possible developments necessarily. It's pretty much getting down to the ins and outs of the rules and looking at it from quite a technical legal compliance perspective. On the agenda, which is pretty packed, we've got things like outsourcing, CP86 and central bank inspections and how you might prepare for them. And we've also got a session on depositories where we look at things like segregation of assets and record keeping requirements. So check out the news section of the Equest.ie website for full details on the agenda and, very importantly, information on how you can get your tickets before they're all snapped up. The other exciting piece of news from the world of Equest is that in the summer of 2019, we will be publishing a very special report called First 18, From Survive to Thrive. It's a roadmap for newly authorised fund management companies to guide them through the key challenges that they're likely to face in their first 18 months of authorisation. The report will feature contributions from industry experts across a number of disciplines in the funds industry, and we're very excited to publish that later this year. If you'd like to be one of the first to get your hands on a free copy of First 18, check out Equest.ie, and in the news section there, you will be able to register your interest, so we will send you on a copy the moment it becomes available later in the summer of 2019. Okay, that's all the housekeeping done. Now let's crack on with the podcast.
The Equest Podcast, Funds Industry Conversations.
Hello, welcome to the third in our special series of podcasts to coincide with the launch of our special report, First 18, From Survive to Thrive, a roadmap for newly authorised fund management companies to guide them through the key challenges during the first 18 months of authorisation. In this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Cormac Kelleher of Mazars, and we'll be looking at personal taxation and the implications, particularly for newly authorised fund management companies, where they are utilising the services of staff located in the UK, but travelling to Ireland for 2 or 3 days a week to help to put substance and staffing into the new company for the first few months of its authorisation. During our conversation, Cormac talks about the need to engage with the Irish Revenue Commissioners on these appointments and also gives some hints and tips on how best to address this challenge. But to begin with, I ask Cormac to give a short introduction of himself.
I've been in Mazars now approximately 8 years. I'm one of the partners here now. I specialise in international tax, and that will kind of bring in the whole financial services side of things as well.
As I mentioned, we have quite a lot of fund management companies that are either through the authorisation process or working through the authorisation process. And as they come out the other side, they're going to face some challenges that they may not have yet directed a lot of attention to. One of those is around tax. So we'll probably see a model where for a number of firms, they will use UK staff to travel to Ireland a couple of times a week to staff up the Irish business for a period of time whilst the business sort of gets its own legs and gets up and standing, up and running itself for probably 12 to 18 months. So what are the kind of tax issues are there for a company that's using that model?
Okay, so I suppose again, looking at what companies have done up to now in terms of in the fund management space, a lot of the focus has been on getting the licenses. They've looked at things from a corporate tax perspective in terms of how the fund will be structured in Ireland and so forth. So there has been some form of tax consideration. What we're seeing though is that where consideration hasn't really been given to is, you know, once all that is done and you have employees, as you said, coming over here 2-3 days a week to run the business, well, how are they being treated? So consideration hasn't been given to what necessary the obligations, the payroll obligations, the PAYE, PRSI, USC obligations on that fund are in Ireland. Because I think, unfortunately, the belief is that these individuals, you know, they're already employed by the group, they're on the UK payroll, we're operating payroll tax in the UK, it's all good.
I'm in that gang.
All that's happening is, you know, is a Ryanair or an Aer Lingus flight a couple of times a week. You know, that's the only difference. It's not. Unfortunately, it's not as simple as that. Because, I mean, at a strict basis, if you go down to the granular and back to wonderful legislation and everything, the legislation basically says you have a foreign employee working for a foreign employer, and he or she is exercising the duties of their employment in the state. So the scope of tax would say he or she is liable to Irish payroll tax.
Okay,
so that's kind of your starting position. Now, it's not as draconian as that, thankfully, because Revenue have issued guidance, and there's guidance out for a number of years, and it was actually updated, I think it was last year. And they basically break it down into positions that if you have what's called a temporary business traveller, and that's someone that's here for up to 30 days. So that's kind of the usual that, you know, they're coming over here for a meeting. They come over for maybe two or three times a year, you know, half a dozen days. That's it. There's no issue from that perspective. The next situation they talk about then is, you know, the 90 to 183 days. So this is kind of say someone that's going to be here for say 90 days approximately, and they're going to be working here, but they're still on the payroll in the UK. The guidelines set out what are the obligations for you to in terms of Irish payroll tax.
Okay, because you're probably going to see a cohort of people who are going to fall into that category. Yeah. That's 2 days a week, more or less.
It's approximately 2 days a week. But there's, again, very, very specific requirements about what you, the employer, are supposed to be doing in Ireland. And I suppose then, you know, you have the third category then are people that are like, you know, they'd be over here maybe 3 days a week for indefinitely, we'll say, for the year or thereabouts. So they might be tipping in over the 183 days. So there's a different set of obligations for them as well.
And tell me, would it make any difference what the contractual relationship was between the individual and the Irish company? So if they were a part-time employee or if they were still employed by the UK and seconded into Ireland?
Okay, well, in terms of are they part-time, full-time, no difference. Okay. They're an employee, full stop, right? In terms of, I suppose, then the contractual relationship, yes, that would make a difference in the sense that if I'm the employee and I'm the employee of the UK entity, and the UK entity is effectively sending me or seconding me once a week or twice a week to work in Ireland, the obligations, if there are Irish payroll obligations to satisfy, they fall back on the UK company because the UK company is the employer. If, however, the individuals, they would say there was contracts in place and it was clear that for those 2 or 3 days a week, I'm an employee of the Irish company, it's the Irish company in the first instance would have to operate it.
Okay.
Now, again, what you see happen in reality is that even though the person might be an employee of the UK company, it is the UK company that has the obligation to operate it. What is agreed with Revenue in advance is that for simplicity, instead of having two payroll registrations, everything's just put through the payroll of the Irish company. So, you know, there's no underpayment of tax. It's just more from a simplicity and an administrative perspective.
Okay.
But at a group level, the correct tax is being paid. That's the main thing.
Okay, and it's quite easy to think that a lot of companies could get to this stage with their Irish authorization before this becomes obvious that it's something that needs to be addressed, because as part of your regulatory authorization, the central bank isn't going to inquire into your tax arrangements for PAYE, PRSI. It's not within their remit.
It's not their remit. I suppose they're just more kind of concerned with the quality of the individual that will say that'll be doing the work and the experience of that individual. So that correctly is all they need to look at. But I see it, unfortunately, I think a lot of the focus is on getting that approval. And it's more, we got our license, it's all great, and we proceed to implementation. And so at that stage, people are going, oh, is there anything else? And they mightn't have thought about the payroll tax implications or the employee tax implications. And that the chances are they have thought about the corporate tax implications, but not the people.
And so what's the next step? I have my golden ticket. I have my Irish authorization for my ManCo. I am going to second people in for a period of time from the UK. They are going to be on Aer Lingus or Ryanair and travel over back and forth. Presumably it's a matter of engaging with your tax advisors, and
it's a matter of engaging with I suppose you could actually take it back a step if you wished, right? You could actually take it back up to HR, in the sense that maybe or maybe not, the group might have a HR policy on employee mobility, because again, what sometimes happens in these scenarios when you have a person that's potentially paying tax in two jurisdictions. There might be a tax shortfall in one of the jurisdictions, or there might even be a tax surplus when refunds and so forth are done later on. So sometimes you nearly have to go back to the HR policy to see, well, do they even have a policy in the first place to say that if there is, say, a refund of tax to be received, well, who gets the refund? Mm. Does it go to the employee? Does it go to the back to the company? Who gets it? So you could take it back up to that level. In terms of, you could take it down to the next level then in terms of the operational level, in terms of who the payroll provider is, and agreeing that the person's on a salary of 100, pretend. How is that salary carved up? How is it agreed that, you know, 2/3 of it are here, or one, and so forth? How is that broken up? You could also look at it in terms of, well, the person's over here 3 days a week, we'll say. Well, where are they staying? Who's paying the cost of the accommodation? Is there an apartment being rented, or are they being stuck into some hotel or something? So do you have BIK issues there, or are the costs of those accommodation and so forth covered under the revenue guidelines for subsistence expenses and so forth? So there's a lot of practical little issues. It's not as simple as just, you know, telling your payroll provider to break up the salary this way. There's like a HR element. And there's also, I suppose, in terms of, well, who pays the cost of the accommodation and so forth.
Great. Thank you very much for those insights and some very, very useful sort of hints and tips as to where ManCos need to look now that they've got their authorization in place.
Thank you very much.
The Quest Academy demystifies funds regulation and jargon, helping you march up the learning curve. If you want to see how good we are at what we do, apply for free in-person 45-minute masterclass. Check out Equest.ie for more details.
The Equest Podcast, Funds Industry Conversations.